Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. I want to dive into some of the quarterback stats for this draft class. I will note a couple of things. If you're like, Jordan, why have you not broken this down into individualized podcasts for the quarterback position? I think that my advice is going to be almost entirely dependent on draft pedigree, which I have very little idea of where that's going to be. I did talk about on the GOAT District with Dan and Theo this week, and it's something I've coming to a little bit more. How do we sort of hit on a Davis Mills type situation? And that's something I think more and more, let's try and take some shots there. I know sort of our base rate argument is that's a bad historic investment. Totally agree with that. You know, if you hit one out of 20 of those guys, or sorry, one out of five for those guys for 20%, like you're doing really good work. And do you want to take one of those guys every year? You have to wait a couple years. Again, you're sort of really quickly building up unhelpful depth is kind of your deal. I think a couple of things is warranted with that. Follow suit with some of what the NFL teams are doing. Constantly trying to take shots and exploratory shots on guys like Philly does. Taking a shot on Jalen Hurts and it working out well for them. I mean, that's been a positive move for them, even if he's not a franchise quarterback. That gives them options. That gives them the ability to move on from a guy like Carson Wentz that didn't go well. Thinking in that sense, right? I really like that. Davis Mills. Again, the stuff with Watson happened. They kind of knew Watson was on his way out, but they had Tyrod. They add Davis Mills. Like, let's see what happens. And now they're not necessarily forced to take a quarterback in a bad class. I think there's some wisdom in that. And I think that's something that we can try and steal too. Are these guys going to be game wreckers? Probably not. But if you look in, you know, if there's a couple of guys in day two, which I think there's probably going to be this year, you know, are we in maybe in the later second round, in the third round? Does that pack some punch? Even if it's not necessarily a quote-unquote hit, does that lengthen your core quarterback? Does it give you some options? Does it give you the ability to trade up? Right, always being able to include a quarterback is something that I think has value in the trade market. So we have to balance those things. I think this might be a year to potentially try and exploit that in a couple of ways. So we're not going to do specific stuff here. I'll have more content on the specific quarterbacks once we have the draft pedigree, because right now I don't think it's super, my advice isn't going to be super, super helpful, because if Sam Howell is a late first round pick, it's going to be treated much differently than if he is a fourth round pick. And I think either of those two things are plausible outcomes, right? So I would just say that. So we're going to do a little highlight of some of the stats. We'll look at some of their draft pedigree, and then we'll revisit this over the weekend when we have some more data and we can get some more specific stuff. So Malik Willis is the highest expected draft position at 13.2. Kenny Pickett is at 20. Desmond Ridder 25.6, and then Corral is 34.2. Sam Howell at 47.4, and then you really get out into the hundreds, right? You're looking at day three. Carson Strong 101, Bailey Zappi 157, and then you get some other guys: EJ Perry, Jack Cohn, and Caleb Ellaby. Well out into day three, Skylar Thompson, Brock Purdy, similarly out there as well. So those are really far, far out type picks. Probably not a place we're going to be super, super invested in. So where are we interested? Well, I was just looking at some of the rushing stuff, because I think it's it's pretty wild when you go and you actually look at the rushing data for some of these guys, and you're like, okay, well, what's the big thing? Like, Willis is your quote big rusher. However, I'm not sure that's actually true. When you look at this, is he a big rusher? Yes. Is he the only one? No. Sam Howell actually had more design rushing yards this year than Willis did. I'll say this. I think Kenny Pickett, not in that category. Kenny Pickett's not one that we're going to be thinking about as a huge rusher. The other, Matt Corral, also probably not going to be thought of as a huge rusher for maybe different reasons, for more of a concern about his frame and the like there. Because when you look at him, he had design runs. He was ranked third amongst the big, I'll call it the big five of Howell, Willis, Corral, Ritter, and Pickett. Corral ranked third. That was at 398 in terms of design rushing yards. Ritter, 372. He actually played 14 games, so he is worse than the other guys. I think a good chunk there worse. But Pickett has added 40 rushing yards designed on the ground. So that's a huge difference there. So you're really limited with Pickett to being a passer. Right? We've talked about some of the hand size and the like. I actually think it's six, or it's going to be like into the later teens, into the 20s for him in terms of where his draft spot might lie. I do think it's notable when you look at some of these guys and you think, all right, what's some of the profile that we looked at? I just grabbed this year's rushing stats. I think everyone think Malik Willis is a big rusher. 20.7% of his rushing yards were breakaway rushing yards. He actually ranks right there with Corral at 20.6. However, that's behind Desmond Ritter at 24.9, behind Sam Howell at 25.4. So while Malik Willis does add stuff in the running game and is a pretty good runner, we might be discounting Howell and Ritter a bit. Again, how great do we feel about Ritter in like the end of the first round? I mean, the same thing with Howell. Like, these guys probably aren't going to go up at the top of the board. But for, and I've sort of thought this all along, was like, you take the big swing on Willis early. If other people are willing to pay that and you can sort of move down and get future capital, I don't necessarily hate that either. Right? I think Willis is really a big bimodal outcome guy. And I want to see how the board falls. Like, if he's going to go in the teens and get a top three type valuation, I'm out. I don't want to go and do that. However, if he goes to Pittsburgh at 20, I don't love that idea. It's too far to fall. It's a lot of teams telling us a lot of things, and he might get top three rookie pick type valuation. Bailing, taking future capital, I'm moving down, and that's kind of the play for that. People talk about him as a runner and him as this big power guy, and that was true at Liberty. The problem is he's not Josh Allen. Josh Allen's like 6'5". Malik Willis is 6'1". Okay, totally different guys in terms of all of this stuff. And there's a lot of concern about his ability to be a passer. We'll get to that in a second. Don't fall for this is the next Josh Allen type development. I don't like that with the Malik Willis angle to this, especially if he doesn't go in the top 10. I really have a hard time thinking about, I just have a hard time getting him that high up on the board, especially if he's not going to, if he's not going to go in the top 10 for us, like, we should be in the NFL draft, we should be very reticent to go really high in the on our rookie boards, because we know that area, there's a big drop off after 10. There's definitely a big drop off in the 20s. We sort of know that. And if a lot of these guys are going to be within 15, 20 picks of each other between, I don't know, 20 and 40, right, in that sort of range, I kind of feel like let's just pass on some of the earlier guys and we'll just wait and take a shot on the way down. Again, if it's Howell, if it's Ritter, I kind of like that more than I like going early on Pickett, for example, or Malik Willis at 20, right? It just gives me a lot of pause with spending really high rookie capital in this class, in a bad class, especially if the NFL is not going to follow suit and spend high rookie pick capital, right? If there's what do we say a lot, right? This is not last year's class where we could feel okay taking Mac Jones in like the mid first, because there was five guys that went off the board in the top 15 picks, and Jones was like, was the fifth of them, right? There were some questions. I said, listen, he's probably got some discount Joe Burrow to his profile as a passer, not going to add a ton as a runner, and you're getting a big discount on that historically. And listen, in a class where it's good, right, having the fifth quarterback go off the board at 15, a third of the picks in the top 15 are quarterbacks, you feel okay about Mac Jones going there. If that's quarterback one, we go back to the EJ Manuel class, right? If quarterback one is the 15th or 16th pick, that's not a situation you should feel good about. There's still plenty of demand for quarterbacks, and if they don't go that high, that tells you the supply is bad, right? And so that's kind of how I view this. You know, and listen, is there a chance that there's two quarterbacks in the top six? Sure, that's possible too. And this is why I think we have to wait to formulate a plan until this all goes on. Some stuff here I think's interesting and valuable. Career time to throw. 3.21 seconds for Malik Willis, by far the highest in the class. Pickett, 3.08. Holds on to the ball forever. Sam Howell, 2.83. Matt Corral, 2.72. A lot of that's RPO action. Desmond Ridder, actually, 2.65. So getting it out kind of quick for him. When you look at some of the other things, you look at Pickett. The more I look at Pickett, the more I think, like, no, thank you. And I haven't done a ton of study on the quarterbacks just because I think the pedigree is going to tell us so much. I think it's going to tell us that we shouldn't be super interested. So I haven't gone hours in on each of these guys. But just look at the stats, and it tells you, I think, a lot of the situation. Kenny Pickett has more turnover-worthy throws as graded by PFF than he does big-time throws. Let me repeat that. More turnover-worthy throws than big-time throws. Okay? That's not good. That is Jimmy Garoppolo level. Not good. And especially at college, for a guy that basically had a breakout year in his last year in college and it was like his fifth year, I hate that. I don't like that at all. Gives me a lot of pause. So, again, he's up there in terms of turnover-worthy plays. Malik Willis, by far, like one of the highest. Pickett, basically right there after him with Corral ahead of Howell and Ridder in terms of turnover-worthy plays. When you look at guys that big-time throw rate, Willis has the highest of the class on his career. The next up is Sam Howell. Sam Howell with a pretty good split, 2.2 big-time throws per one turnover-worthy throw. That's a turnover-worthy play. That's a good difference. Howell gets in a lot of trouble in terms of taking pressures to sacks. 26.7% of his pressures turned into sacks. You got to get rid of the ball. That's a Joe Burrow problem. That's a concern with him. Malik Willis, same way, 26%. Desmond Ridder holds on to it too much and gets himself in trouble. 24.3% of his pressures turn into sacks. So those are too high. Pickett and Corral get the ball out and don't sit there and wait. Yards per attempt in college, 9.1 for Howell. 9.03 for Corral, 8.4 for Willis, and then you drop all the way down. Desmond Ridder, 7.8. Kenny Pickett, 7.3. Career PFF grade. Sam Howell, best career PFF grade at 74.8. Matt Corral, next up at 81.6. And then you drop down to 76.6 for Malik Willis, 75 for Kenny Pickett, and Desmond Ridder at 74.7. When you look at these guys, it really was this past year where you got a big time difference between Desmond Ridder really developing. And I think, you know, how do we look at that? There's been plenty of study that says, like, hey, is it overall class? Is it best? Our overall profile, is it best year for passers? Like, how do we sort of view that? I think there's a lot of value in taking the best year, especially as we look at more and more of these guys and how they develop. There's a lot of development that goes on or doesn't go on that's not on the field, or that's not, that's taking place outside of traditional coaching, right? If this is these QB camps and the like. And one of the things that we know is Ritter had that go on, right? It took a huge leap forward because he's getting with some good coaching. He's getting with a much better, I think he was with Jordan Palmer, but getting some additional coaching and spent a whole summer doing this and takes a big leap. Now, Drake London, very similar. He did that, did a lot of that work, took a big leap forward. And that's a good thing. That shows some positive development. With guys like Corral, didn't really do that. Sam Howell went backwards. He had a really good grade as a freshman, one of the best freshman grades PFF's ever given out, and then took a big leap up to 20 in 2020, up to 91.5 in terms of their PFF passing grade, and then takes a step back. I think some of that is due to situation, that lost some of his receivers, lost some of his weaponry, and we see that come back a little bit. So I do think early on Howell, these guys that come in and do it early and have some variation, have some fluctuation. We've seen this at some other positions too. A guy like Justin Ross. I think it's really interesting when they go early and are good early and they develop and then there's stunted growth for some reason, especially when you have factors you can attribute that to situationally. I think you can tilt your head and say, okay, like there's some stuff early on in the career I kind of like. Maybe you get them in a good situation. You can bring the there's more ceiling there than we saw this past year. I think that's a case with Howell. I think the other case is with a guy like Ritter taking that big step forward in his past year. I should probably say the same thing about Pickett. However, I worry a little bit that Pickett was just in school forever. It was like a fifth-year thing. He had all these starts and then is basically good when he's just older than everybody. That gives me a little bit of pause with him. But he does have the best of any guy in this class. He has the best single PFF passing grade this past year of any guy in this class. However, the best before that was 75.8. So a very marked increase. He's the only guy that has played all 5 years of his career through from 2017 into 2021. Pickett played all the years, and not for guys like Willis, Ritter, and Howell and Corral. Corral only 4, Howell only 3. Ritter played 4, and Malik Willis played 4, but really only started 2 years at Auburn. 2 years because he was at Auburn and then transferred to Liberty. So that's really as I sort of talk through this more and more, I'm coming a little bit further to the conclusion that I'm more on Sam Howell, even though I hated what some of the stuff I saw on tape with Sam Howell. I think it's interesting. He offers some stuff in the running game that's arguably as good as Malik Willis. And as a passer, we saw him do more. And I think that's a really interesting place to start from, especially if there's going to be a big discount. Again, do we want to spend a lot in a class that's not particularly good? Don't love that. But I like trying to do some discount shopping and a potential arbitrage opportunity. That could actually be Sam Howell, 95th percentile in terms of career big time throw rate, for example. 90th percentile in terms of career yards per attempt. 85th percentile in terms of career PFF grade. Takes sacks way too much. Right, that's the problem with him. But when you look, it's the guys that stick out in this class, Howell and Willis. Both of them add the rushing element. I really like that. And so I think I'm going to be interested in Howell, especially if he's going to be in the second round of rookie picks. I'm interested in that for sure. And we'll see where he goes in the NFL draft. How about him going in like the second round to a team like Pittsburgh or a team like the Saints? Something like that. I think it'd be really interesting. Right, I think that would be a potential shot there. Stable franchise, get the ability to develop somebody. Atlanta would be an interesting spot for him as well, especially if they go receiver early. Right? All of a sudden, you have the makings of a pretty decent coach and a developing set of weapons. I think that would be really interesting and a good opportunity there for him. I'm definitely going to watch where he's probably the most interesting player on day two for me. And I wrecked him in week one of the college football season because he made an interception. That was like simply unforgivable. He can redeem himself by getting to a decent landing spot here with maybe a coach that can develop him, but he's got to stop taking sacks. So that's overall the deal. I mean, Corral's going to get the questions about his RPO stuff, right? That's a hole in his game, and he's a little bit slender in terms of his build, so you don't necessarily love that either. Pickett's got the small hands, so we'll see with that. I think for me, that my favorite guys, I think probably at cost, will end up being Howell and Ridder. So we'll see where they come out, but I'm excited. This will be I'm releasing this day of draft, so you can get both the tight end and the quarterback stuff on the day of the draft. Get your draft day watching in, and you know, we'll have content here throughout the weekend. We'll have the board out by early next week. So that'll do it for this episode. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.